I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular.
Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm Jody Weitz, your professional and life coach, making sure both of those areas are nothing less than spectacular. I'm here with Andy Freed. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Jody. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Let me tell you something about Andy. Andy is chairman of Virtual Inc., advising global organizations, including Microsoft, Meta, and Google, and his company has been named a best place to work for more than a decade. He is a leadership professional, keynote speaker, and a business strategy consultant, leveraging experience to help organization and people grow. In the last 35 years, Andy has guided candidates in their runs for state and national office, coached a Division I college sports team, and chaired a hospital board, all while finding the time to catch nearly 100 Bruce Springsteen shows around the world. He also brings a unique twist to leadership conversations in his book, Lead Like the Boss, using Bruce Springsteen's leadership style as a framework for building trust, communication, and momentum inside teams. Wow, that is absolutely fabulous, Andy. I want to say, have you always loved The Boss? Have you been a fan?
I'll go back to when I was about 10 years old. I begged my mom to buy me the Born to Run album at Caldor's department store, and Caldor's was a big deal on the East Coast growing up. And my mom at the time said, "Well, I'll get it for you, but are you sure you're going to keep listening to it?" And I can say that, you know, now 47 years later, I've done pretty well. I think we're getting our money's worth from it.
I think you're definitely getting your money's worth. I love on your website, you have the leading statement, and I'm going to read that. All right. And that says, turn every message into a moment, every leader into a rock star. From boardrooms to big stages, communication is your greatest leadership advantage. And that is so great. I want to know how you reframed your whole Bruce Springsteen experience into what you're doing with businesses, people, coaching today.
Yeah, so I'm one of these people that's always believed that learning is everywhere, and that, you know, it's your job as a leader to keep learning. What fun is life otherwise if you're not growing and learning? So as you mentioned earlier, I am one of these people also who is this close to selling everything I own and just following Bruce and the E Street Band all around the world. Like, what if I could? He was just out your way in the Bay Area a couple of nights ago.
Great. Were you in Portland as well?
No, I wasn't there. I would have loved to have been. Bruce was there. I would have loved to have been there.
But
for me, I was coming home from one of the shows and just reflecting on some of what I had seen, and I wrote a LinkedIn post just about what I had learned, and, you know, specifically focusing in on a couple of things that he did during the show. Heard from a lot of folks that post resonated with them because it wasn't like your regular leadership post. It wasn't another thing, you know, quoting a Harvard Business Review article. Got a lot of positive feedback on that. And from that, we went a little deeper and the book was born.
That's great. Now I want to just, looking at, you know, one of your Opening hooks in your book is leadership refrain. Tell me a little bit about that. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of what I love with Bruce is the intentionality of his shows. And, when Bruce is going up and performing, it doesn't start when he takes the stage. It starts hours before when he's coming up with his set list and figuring out what is the show going to be all about? What do I want people to think, feel, and do during the show? And in the case of his latest tour, his latest tour has a little bit of a political slant to it, which I'll give him credit for being willing to take a stand. So he knows that he wants to open the show a certain way. And he wants people to think a certain way when they're coming out. He also knows that there's parts of the show where he wants the audience to be kind of up in a frenzy, and parts of the show where he wants the audience to be quiet and more reflective, how he wants them to feel. And then what he wants them to do, does he want them to participate and sing along? Does he want them to be quiet? Does he want them to be up dancing in the aisles? All of those are done with intention. And those are things which I'll say for leaders. That same idea of coming up with a refrain and coming up with that intention is what you need to do before every communication, whether it's to one person or to 1,000. Really being intentional about those three elements of think, feel, or do, gives you a sense of how you want to communicate with folks. And that's what turns the message into a moment, is that forethought and intentionality.
That's great. I think you are definitely speaking about something different because I get that with a leader. They know where they want to go. They know what they want to have happen. They know about their outcomes. They will communicate that, but the feeling part is really where things drop out. Feel in business. Give an example. Tell me a little more about
I think the
how
problem
someone
is
would step
a lot
in.
of leaders don't think that feeling is their responsibility. They think that it's all about, like, let me tell you just the facts and I'm not going to worry about feel. But the reality is that if you don't address people's feelings, they might not be ready to hear the facts. They might be too apprehensive. They might be caught in their own biases. They might be caught in just being nervous about change. So unless you address the feeling side of it, you're going to lose them. So it could be something as simple as, I use an example in the book of just telling your company about a new health plan. So you're switching from, Blue Cross to Kaiser. Now you can get up and just tell them the facts of that. But you also have to remember that what your audience is hearing is, geez, I wonder if I'm gonna have to switch my doctor. I wonder if this is gonna cost more. I wonder if they really understand how much healthcare means to me. I'm worried I might be sick and have a pre-existing condition. Is this gonna impact me? Those are all the things that are going through people's heads. If you don't address those things right at the outset, they're never gonna hear your facts. And they're never gonna move on to the do step because they're gonna be stuck on their emotion. So understanding that leaders set the emotion for the organization, and that's your responsibility. That's a critical part of the think, feel, do triangle.
And what you're saying is trying to understand and have empathy for the people that you
Absolutely.
lead. But what about the fact that the leader should be vulnerable and talk about her own feelings, his own feelings about, this is the first thing that came up. I was worried, concerned.
Absolutely. I mean, there's two things there. There's, putting yourself in the audience's shoes and really understanding that you're looking at things from the audience's point of view. And leaders need to remember that communication isn't about what they want to say, it's what the audience needs to hear. And that you really need to understand things from the audience's view in order to do that. The vulnerability is so important. I'm somebody who naturally shares more of myself and of my personal side with my team. Because it is important to have that vulnerability, and it is important to have that kind of point of connection. And again, I can go all the way to, back bringing it back to Bruce. Bruce suffers from anxiety and depression. So one of the reasons, and one of the things he tries to do in his show, is he'll say, "I'm going to start the show out huge. In the first 5 minutes, give everybody their money's worth," because for him, that helps allay his anxiety and depression. That helps him. Now be able to feel like I've now given them their money's worth. Now I can just relax.
I love that.
And it's.
And tell me about, I don't know whether you're just at a concert or following him, but the first 5 minutes in his current tour starts
It's him
pretty
talking.
get everybody is talking. I mean, he talks and then he launches into the song War. Tell me a little bit about that and how he gets everybody involved, whether or not, again, we know he's a political person.
And again, I have a lot of respect for him being willing to speak his mind on politics and being willing to forsake some of his fan base in doing that. That there are folks who will say, like, I'm, just, that are in the, just shut up and sing category. But he believes he has a, if he's got a microphone, he's got a responsibility to use it and, use it for kind of advancing causes. And I think that's, that's admirable. But he's been starting the show now by talking about what's happening in our country and talking about his view of democracy under threat and some of the things that are values that he has held dear in his 55 years of singing and talking about this country. There are certain things that he's talked about and certain things that he's sung about that are now starting to be under peril. So he launches into a 3 to 5 minute kind of talk with that before a great cover of the song War,
Yes,
which
a great
which the band
cover.
hasn't played since the 80s. And
Right.
they're still bringing it well, but it really does, drive the message home. And it's also back to what we were saying earlier about intention is all that's done with a lot of forethought, and all that is done with a lot of thought that goes into it. He's not just getting up there and playing and hoping for the best. And you
Right.
see so many leaders, when confronted with a communication opportunity, that's what they're doing. They're getting up and just hoping for the best.
And in your book, like Bruce, again, be a leader like the boss, you're also talking a lot about storytelling. Bruce is an amazing
Brilliant storyteller.
storyteller. Tell our listeners how that is really important and how to do that skillfully.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're wired to tell stories. We're wired to understand stories. There's a reason you tell kids bedtime stories, and there's a reason that years later you can remember them. Stories are something which the brain is just wired for, and the brain's also wired for when you're hearing a story, you're paying attention because you want to hear what's next in the story. That's not the same as the way we communicate in business. In business, increasingly, people communicate by PowerPoint. And the first thing they do when somebody says, I have to communicate with an audience, is they go and they click, they either click new slides in PowerPoint, or even worse, they open last month's deck from communicating the same thing and just change some of the titles. When really what they should be doing is taking out a sheet of paper and writing down, it's, I see you're a pen and paper fan, and writing down, what do you want the audience to think, feel, and do? What's the story I'm going to tell to get them there? And if you start to think that way, the slides are the last thing that you do, and that presentation is the last element of it, and it should be reinforcing the story that you're telling, not, not business karaoke of just delivering a whole bunch of bullet points that are disconnected.
And you have an opportunity to really connect with people by telling them that
Absolutely.
story.
And I can remember the stories as Bruce tells on his albums from the 80s. I can still remember them because that's the power of storytelling.
I mean, songs are storytelling. Look at the river, look
Absolutely.
at that's the beauty and that's the connection. And it's a great idea. I really think what you're saying is spot on with connect with them first, tell a story first, and then show them PowerPoint slides.
Absolutely. And that story can be the thing that people will retain afterwards. And done right, it's a really powerful vehicle.
And along those lines, what I also like in your book is you say, turn communication into moments. What is that all about?
Well, it's just understanding the notion that you have moments to connect with people all through the day, and moments that can be very, very meaningful to somebody. It doesn't take a 10-minute or 20-minute or speech or a 30 or 60-minute meeting. One of the most meaningful moments for me in my career was when I was working with somebody who was running for governor of Maine, And just out of the blue, one morning, he just walked into my office and said, "You know, I just want to say thank you for making this dream of mine to run for governor come true." And I can remember where he was standing. I can remember where I was sitting. I remember everything about that 30-second moment and what it meant for my career, and what it meant for just, for just my feeling of self-worth. So those moments exist all throughout the day. And your ability to do, as the one-minute manager once said, catch somebody doing something right. That's your job as a leader, is to see if you can find those moments and not force them to be giant events, but it could be as simple as you're riding down in the elevator with somebody and just letting them know they've been seen, can make all the difference in the world.
And it really does make a difference. I mean, people like to be valued,
It's
bottom line, and the fact that you notice what they're doing and what they've done and the hard work they're putting in, is just can really build that relationship.
it's something that goes back to William James, who was considered like the father of American psychiatry in the late 1800s. He wrote that the deepest human need is the need to be appreciated. And when you think about that, the deepest human need is the need to be appreciated. Like, deeper than sex, deeper than money, deeper than power. People just want to be seen and appreciated. And there's such an opportunity for leaders to do that. It's something that Bruce does well. It's something that I've been trying to do well, and can really make a difference in people's lives.
Well, yeah. And going into another area, with walking around, with noticing, with being honest, is some people I have heard have said, "Hey, I know they're being authentic, but maybe they're just manipulating me, to get things done, to motivate me." How does somebody, how do you work with that? And how do you work with, just coaching someone, especially in Microsoft, Apple, and Google, to relax, be their authentic self, because there's intensity in getting things done in those larger companies. So how do you coach someone in that area?
It's funny. One of the things I always used to tell political candidates was always tell the truth and be yourself. If for no other reason, it's the easiest thing to remember. And that, because sooner or later you get caught up in the tangle of inauthenticity, and you lose yourself. So it's the same advice that I give to business folks of just, understanding kind of where your strengths are, understanding where your weaknesses are, and being willing to drive towards that. One of the stories I love on performance management, is years ago, and before he was a punchline, Tiger Woods was a phenom on the golf course. And when he first came onto the tour, he led the tour in every category but one. The only category he didn't lead the tour in was sand saves. He wasn't very good out of sand traps. And what I loved with that was his coach at the time did something which was different than what most would happen in most business performance reviews. If there's a business performance review, Tiger would have gone into his ADP form and would have seen, Tiger consistently exceeds goals and all these categories, sand saves. He has to work on this, and I recommend that he spend next year practicing sand saves. What Tiger's coach did was said, "We're not going to do that. We're going to work on driving accuracy. You're already number one on the tour in it, and we're just not going to hit the sand traps anymore, because that's your strength. And we're going to play to that." It's the same thing when you talk about authenticity. It's understanding where your strengths are and being willing to play to those, and not spending so much time trying to address and fix your weaknesses. But really play into the natural strengths that people have, lets you be more authentic and lets you be more comfortable being more authentic.
And it's easy, as you said. What do you
It's an easy
if
character to play, being yourself.
right, you don't have to make anything up. And if people normally put on a facade because they think this person doesn't like me or I'm people pleasing, etc. But actually, when you're authentic, you actually feel that person being authentic, so
Absolutely.
you have a better chance of making them like you. Now,
Yeah.
going back to authenticity and stepping into a role, what would you say when somebody, you have to have that really difficult conversation about talking to somebody who may not be doing the best they can or may not be using their strength, or you may have to say, look, I know you got the potential. What's going on? How would you recommend a leader have that kind of conversation with a team, somebody on their team?
And sometimes that's somebody on the team. Sometimes that can be a good portion of the team that's that's not producing. As I've experienced that as a coach and in other places. But I think that that starts with one, putting yourself in the audience's in the audience's shoes. Are they ready to hear this feedback? Have you prepared them for this feedback? So often one of the first things that I'll say with that is, hey, I've got some feedback for you, and you can read from somebody right then whether they go into their shell, and now I've got to proceed carefully, or are they more open to it? But just setting that up, and being just kind of overt of going to give you some feedback. And then as you're doing that, I'm also big on, unless, this is the 10th time you've done it, providing some path and hope, some path, hope, and motivation. How can you kind of, give the person, if you're saying they're not at their best, well, what's a way you can kind of get them there? Because the task of leaders is to create more leaders, not to tear people down. So how do you get somebody who can really then be built up and get to that next level?
And you can also offer, hey, what do you need? I'm a
What do you need?
resource.
Or
Use me.
I've been there myself.
Yes, that's a
That
great
would
thing
go
to
back to
say.
vulnerability. That's something which is huge. I've had the same challenge. Let's talk about it. There's a lot of things you can do that can frame that in the positive, and just kind of help somebody. And there's nothing more rewarding than when somebody's been in that place and then you see them get out of it and get to the next level. That's a phenomenal reward
Oh,
for a leader.
absolutely. Absolutely. And people notice that. People notice when you promote others and when you work with others. And boy, talk about banking up your reputation, your ability to have great success, great relationships in that company, because they know that you're working in their best interest.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is great. Now, also, what I really love in the book is rapid fire practicals that you mention. One thing to do before each meeting, one thing to stop doing immediately, one question every leader should ask their team, one sign your communication is actually working. Love all that. Talk about intentionality and thinking about what's going on. So, I want examples. One thing to do before each meeting, speaking from your own experience.
Center yourself and understand where you're coming from. Being very self-aware, before the meeting of your own mood, your own energy, and your own need to kind of set that tone. Recognizing that before you present to anybody or talk to anybody, nobody cares about that issue more than you do. So if I come in and my energy is a 5 out of 10, I can't expect my audience to respond with a 7 out of 10. I'm going to expect they're going to respond with a 4. So really before any meeting like that, I'm centering myself and trying to figure out what's the energy I'm trying to bring, where's my headspace at, and making sure that I'm self-aware enough to know, am I ready to communicate this in the way that I want to communicate it? Because there are times when I've gotten to the office, and we've all had those days where you realize that, maybe now is not the right moment for me to have that conversation because I'm not in the right headspace for it. And you're, that's a very important save at that moment.
Again, what is it they say? 80% of our communication is not through words.
Absolutely. And that's where, We put ourselves at a disadvantage often with a lot of the way we're working now on Zoom and Teams, where it's impossible to make eye contact on Zoom. You can't look at the camera and look at the person in the eye at the same time. And that's so important for communication. It's body language, and increasingly on Zoom, it's a neck up, body, you're missing the body language. So one, lean into the moments that you have that face-to-face conversations and that you're able to do that because it's so valuable. But also making sure that you recognize that when you are on Zoom or Teams or anything, you have to make up for some lost ground, that you don't have with body language, you don't have with other elements, and look for other ways just to check in with somebody on how they're doing and how they're receiving the message.
Great. By the way, you're doing a fabulous job with making eye contact. I want
We're
listeners to know that.
all right, excellent.
Yeah, A plus for you. He's walking his talk, folks. And again, a way you can, create that energy, get things going. I'm going to drop down to the one that says, one question every leader should ask their team.
I think for me, the question they should ask their team more than anything is you want to understand kind of how they're receiving the message. And you kind of want to constantly check back with them on, does this sound right to you? Do you have questions about this? What Bruce talks about in his music is he knows he writes a good pop song when he hears people singing the lyrics back to him. When you're in a stadium of 80,000 people and hear everyone singing Hungry Heart, you wrote a good pop song. So some of what I'm trying to do when I'm asking a question of my team is seeing whether or not they can sing the lyric back to me. Because that tells me whether or not the lyric worked. If I'm pausing and they're staring blankly, it tells me that the communication hasn't occurred. I still have to go back and do some more. So I love that idea of, have you come up with a message that people can sing back to you and checking that along the way.
Great. That is great. You're valid. You're just making sure, checking in to make sure that
And
they're hearing the message.
people need to hear something seven times before they retain it. And so many leaders move on from it before that. And again, I go back to Bruce again. Bruce has played, I guess, with this tour, he's now up to, he's played Born to Run 1,882 times live.
Oh my goodness.
And when you think of that, like every night he's playing that song, but he's bringing it with a full effort every night because he knows that there's some people in the audience that have never been to a show before. And there's some people who are like me who are comparing, hey, is the 95th time as good as the 94th time? So he's bringing it his full effort. But leaders often, when they have to communicate something, will quickly move on. They'll say, well, I've said this to them already three times. I don't want to say it a fourth. I'm bored of it. But that's like moving on from your antibiotic before the recommended dose. It's not going to cure you. And then they're not going to be able to sing the words back to you because they haven't heard it the seven times they need to hear it.
By the way, Born to Run, I play bass guitar, and
All right.
yes, we have a performance with my band at the end of May, and we just added Born to Run because it's such
Excellent.
an awesome song.
It's a fun one.
Yeah, and we're going to start off with it because, like what we're talking about, get the energy flowing, get everybody invested, get them up, get them singing. It's one they know the lyrics on. So just wanted to mention that since we are talking about Bruce
Absolutely. That's a good
Springsteen.
boss homage.
Yeah, thank you. Going back, one thing that you should stop doing immediately.
One thing that you should stop doing is, I would love to delete PowerPoint from the computers of leaders all around the world. It's thinking that I would say leadership and communication are the same, but communication and slides are not the same thing. And one of the things that I just go crazy with is this primacy of my PowerPoint slides. The phrase I hate the most when somebody is presenting is when somebody asks a question and their answer is, Well, I'm going to get to
Breathe.
that in a few slides.
Yeah.
And, it's not about your slides, it's about their question. That's what's more important.
Or if you'll look more closely at the slide, you'll get
And
and
the slides are just talking points, and we're doing the business karaoke. And so the thing I would stop doing is acting as though everyone in the world is just looking to see your slide presentation, when in fact, your slides can be really, really helpful visual elements to reinforce something. But they're not the story unto themselves. And people need to think about the story they're telling, what they want people to think, feel, and do, and then get to it, not immediately open PowerPoint and start cranking. That's probably the biggest stop doing I give people.
Yeah, well, they use, and I'm guilty of this as well. The PowerPoint is a crutch.
Absolutely.
It's nerve-wracking talking in front of a group of people. So you've got your stuff, you've got your own talking points instead of, again, starting with the story, looking people in the eye, asking, am I, are, you know, are, do you understand? Are you with me? Any questions up to this point? So how do you make people feel more comfortable about talking and connecting with the audience, with communication, and not relying or keeping PowerPoint to the very last?
It's all about just kind of finding what's that person's strengths and what's their comfort zone. I think that people need to recognize and play into that. If somebody is more comfortable talking to people one-on-one, then why are we putting them in front of 1,000 people? And I draw energy from a larger crowd. So I'd rather be doing that. So let's look for opportunities for that. So a lot of what I try to do as a coach and as a, someone working with folks, who are communicating is try to find, everyone has a sweet spot. Everyone can communicate in one way or another. And it's just figuring out what that is. And then how do we, just as Tiger leaned into driving accuracy, how do we lean into it more? How do I find that, and how do I keep them out of their sand traps? If for somebody, getting up in front of 1,000 people, that's their sand trap, let's just not put them there. It's going to be uncomfortable for everybody. So understanding that and looking for that and being honest with people on, what they're good at, what they need work on, and how we're going to direct them keeps everybody to a place where they're more authentic and they're getting to a better spot.
That makes a lot of sense. Again, leading with your authenticity and who, where are you comfortable so you can be fully authentic wherever you are, whether, again, a small meeting, a large group, a large audience.
And remember, when you kind of look at it and kind of on the level, I'm going to Bruce Springsteen shows. If somebody said to you tomorrow, do you want to watch a 76-year-old guy with anxiety and depression sing and dance? You might say, I don't know. And yet somehow he's found a way to pull it off. And same thing with the Stones. I saw them a couple of years ago. Do you want to go see an 81-year-old guy sing and dance tonight? So even when it looks like somebody might not have all the cards that they need, you can find those positives and find the reasons why, and why somebody can be a great communicator.
Right, great. And just a few last questions getting at the end of our podcast. It's been great so far. Thank you. What is the difference? You've coached again tech and people high up in tech with Google, Microsoft, and now you're coaching, working with politicians. What have you found are the difference in coaching leaders in both of those organizations?
Well, I think the biggest challenge when you work with politicians is, the challenge they have of the sort of Damocles of re-election hanging over their heads. Somebody at Google isn't facing every 2 years they have to reapply for their job, and that's a and that they have to not just reapply for their job, but they have to launch a massive fundraising campaign to enable themselves to do so. So that process certainly skews the view of a lot of politicians. And it's why you certainly see a different level of discourse in the Senate when somebody has a 6-year term than in the House when somebody has a 2-year term. Is they're able to actually get into a groove and not worry about re-election for a few years, which is just an increasing pressure. So I do think that that pressure of having to reapply, that's tough. And it's very real, and it distorts, unfortunately, people's views, because you start to see politicians kind of appeal more to the donor class of voters than to regular voters, and what donors want is very different than what voters want. It's a real challenge that we have in our system these days.
It certainly is, and I agree with you. It would be easier on politicians if they stayed the course for what their constituents really want. But there are pressures
A
when
lot, a
they
lot, a lot of
press
cross
them
pressure
down.
for sure.
All right. And last question. Have you ever met Bruce Springsteen,
I
being at
have.
over 100
I've
concerts?
had the opportunity to
Tell
meet him
me
on his
more.
book tour. And what I was so impressed with, I met him twice on his book tour, was that he was fully present both times, because he understood how important it was for me to meet him. And just to have the, and for all the times he's shaken a fan's hand and all the times he's done that, he understood that the minute that I was spending with him was a very important minute for me. And was fully present and fully just kind of himself, which was a great gift for me, and something which I was just so pleased to see. So
Great.
hope at some point I can have a more meaningful conversation with him, but have valued and everything that I've learned from the from my seat out in the arena.
And did you send him a copy of your book?
I did.
Great.
So Steve
Perfect.
Van Zandt is a friend of a friend, so he got a copy and asked for signed copies for him and the boss. So I got the
What?
privilege of signing a copy for Bruce, was something which is pretty fun.
Your life is complete. You
Absolutely.
don't need to go on anymore.
Absolutely. I was pretty
That's
excited for it.
fabulous. Yeah, and by the way, he wrote a great book. I loved it. It was really great. Well, Andy, it has been a true pleasure talking
It's
with
been
you.
spectacular, we could say.
Oh, yes, thank you. And love the way you see things differently. You see leadership differently. How can people find out more about you, about your book, getting it in their hands?
Sure, you can go to my website, which is pretty simple. It's just andyfried.com, AndyFreed.com. Has information about the book, speaking, consulting, all that's there. So I was lucky to get to the
Wonderful.
domain fast.
Yes, wonderful. Well, thank you again for all your wisdom, all
Thank
your
you, Jody.
interesting comments, and just being a total Bruce fan.
Thanks, Jody. And I'll look forward to hearing your rendition of Born to Run.
I may, if you'd like, I can record it for
Oh,
you.
all right. That'll be great. Absolutely. Be a great outro for this.
All right,
And
that'll
so
be
thank
great.
you.
All
Thanks,
righty.
Jody.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people.